Good morning, everyone. My name is Scott Pierce, and I'm publisher of Corporate Counsel Magazine. Welcome to today's webcast presentation. Today's presentation is sponsored by Iron Mountain. We're very pleased this morning to introduce a topic that is very important in this age, especially for in-house counsel. The title of our webcast is Three Proven Methods to Accelerate Litigation Readiness and Reduce Costs. Joining me this morning are two excellent speakers, and I'm looking forward to hearing their presentation today. Our first presenter is Barry Murphy, co-founder and principal analyst at EDJ Group. He's a regular contributor to the eDiscovery Journal and is a thought leader in all things retention, eDiscovery, records management, and content archiving. Previously, Barry was a director of product marketing at Mimosa Systems, a leading content archiving and e-discovering software company. He joined Mimosa after a highly successful stint as principal analyst for e-discovery, records management, and content archiving at Forrester Research. Also joining us this morning is Kevin Coughlin, director of product management at Iron Mountain. He's a director with Iron Mountain, responsible for its document management solutions, core products, which includes capture and archive, as well as developing and delivering solutions for the legal and discovery market. Prior to joining Iron Mountain, he was a director of product management at Symantec, where he was responsible for product strategy, definition and execution of their storage resource management products. He has over 25 years' experience in document, storage, and data management, as well as IT management experience. We're going to start with Barry this morning, who is going to present, followed by Kevin, and then we will have a short Q&A at the end of the session. I encourage everyone to, during the presentation, submit their questions, and then we will, again, review them at the end and have some Q&A. So I'd like to kick it off this morning with Barry, who will present first. Barry, take it away.
Thanks, Scott, and welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. One of the most frequent questions that I get from anyone that I'm talking to is, why does e-discovery matter? It's been around, the subject of discovery has been around since the practice of law began, and electronic discovery has been in existence for over a decade. But what's happened is that finally e-discovery as a topic area, as a market, has made the mainstream news. So you see some headlines here. We're in the New York Times now. It's in the Wall Street Journal. There's no escaping the fact that e-discovery is a burden for every company that exists. The federal rules amendments in 2006 really squarely placed the burden on companies to be responsible for all of their information. Whether it's in paper form, whether it's in electronic form, there's accountability that sits there. And what happens with accountability and what comes with that is real-world bottom-line impact. So from a cost perspective, the Wall Street Journal was actually estimating that large companies we're going to spend $1.3 billion on e-discovery in 2010. Now, that's a big market, and we believe at EDJ Group that it really goes beyond that in terms of spending, and that there are a lot of hidden dollars in e-discovery around processing, scanning and coding, and review that really make this a multi-billion dollar market. And a lot of it is unnecessary and really can be avoided if companies take the right steps in terms of addressing e-discovery somewhat proactively. And I say somewhat proactively because there's always going to be some inherent reactiveness in discovery because it comes from an external request or an internal investigation that's happening. But there's always a precipitating event, but there are certain actions that companies can take to make this an easier process. We're also seeing a rise in sanctions. There's an increase in the percentage of cases with sanctions that are either monetary or adverse impact. And what this means is that there's a huge cost to not doing e-discovery correctly and not taking it seriously, in especially in cases like adverse inference, that can have a much bigger cost than a million or multi-million dollar sanction. An adverse inference can actually cause someone to lose a multi-million dollar case. What this means is that the courts are increasingly saying there are tools and processes available to you to do discovery, and if you don't start using them and putting your processes in place and putting some intelligence around it and some structure around it, that you're going to be, you know, looked at as being ignorant. And that's really what the data on sanctions is telling us, is that maybe the number of sanctions doesn't go up, but the percentage of sanctions awarded in cases is going up, and courts are saying, take this seriously and really start to address it. So one of the things that we've seen in the market as a response to the fact that e-discovery is gaining traction and mind share is that information governance is gaining some traction as a topic. EDJ Group recently conducted some joint research with Vialumina around information governance. And what we found is that the value of governing and controlling information within the organization is, there's a realization that doing so has value. So about a third of the respondents that responded to our survey actually say that information governance is a model of managing information that they are actually executing on. And another 20% actually see IG, as we call it, as an emerging concept that has some value. I mean, there are certainly some cynics in the market that see this as kind of a rebranded records management exercise. But for the most part, people are starting to see value in managing information governance. What they don't necessarily see is, you know, a real definition of what information governance is, and rather a realization that it's a big umbrella that includes a lot of different, what I would call, disciplines. So clearly records management is part of the information governance umbrella, but so are other aspects of managing information, whether it's a compliance processes, whether it's the storage and archiving infrastructure, security and risk management of the data, as well as e-discovery. And we're clearly seeing e-discovery become part of this information governance umbrella, driven in large part by the fact that, you know, organizations realize we need to be more proactive, we need to take this seriously, and where do we put e-discovery? We have to put it under some kind of an umbrella. Now, this is important as we go through this chat today, because the fact that we put it under the information governance umbrella doesn't necessarily make it easy. In fact, it actually can complicate things, and I'll talk a little bit about that as we go forward. One thing that is clear is that organizations have a mandate for action on information governance. You may have heard a lot lately in the news about talks of maybe even changing the federal rules of civil procedure a little bit more to take the burden off of companies. The 2006 amendments clearly laid that burden squarely on the shoulder of companies to be accountable for their information. And so there's this discussion that potential rules changes could take some of that burden away. We surveyed our user base, and what was very clear is that, you know, only a minimal number of respondents think that the changes will reduce the burden and expense of e-discovery. If you look at case law, if you look at sanctions, if you look at the way things are trending, there's a recognition by the courts that there are tools and processes available to do e-discovery, and you're going to be accountable for it. And so it becomes one of those issues where right now organizations start to say, okay, I need to take on the governance challenge specifically to address things like e-discovery. The problem is that information governance as a practice is extremely immature. So in our survey, only a third of companies actually feel like they have budget allocated over the next 12 months for information governance. Now, there may be budgets for other projects that fall under the information governance umbrella, for example, an email archiving budget or a litigation budget that can be used towards e-discovery. The fact is that a lot of people don't necessarily recognize those as information governance projects, which sort of speaks to the immaturity of information governance practice. And the fact that the practice is so immature, you know, is a huge risk for companies because, you know, as I mentioned, there's all the potential for sanctions. There's all sorts of unnecessary costs out there. And without a mature practice of controlling information, it's very difficult to really, truly, proactively bring down those costs and make the process more efficient. And what we see in organizations is that confusion reigns. We asked our respondents, what department do information governance practitioners sit in? And it's really all over the map. They might be in legal, they might be in IT, they might actually have an information governance team, although that's a fairly minimal number of folks. But really, the predominant answer was either legal or other. So the fact is that no one really knows where information governance lives within the organization. And as further evidence of the confusion, we asked our respondents, who do they believe and should own information governance compared to who actually does own information governance within their organizations today? Across the board, 45% of our respondents today don't know who is ultimately responsible for information governance at their organization. Why is this a problem? It's a problem because without knowing who's ultimately responsible, it's very hard to parse out either budget or decisions around, how to execute processes. All of those things get tangled up in a bureaucracy because there's simply no way to make a final decision on who runs things. So what ends up happening is you have very siloed e-discovery efforts. You have very poor communication between legal and IT throughout the process. You have e-discovery as a sort of reactive firefight where no one's making good decisions. And again, as I mentioned before, all of these unnecessary costs exist. And again, that just leads to higher risk profiles and just a generally negative view of e-discovery within the organization. And so, what does this mean for organizations? It means, as I'll talk about later, really assigning ownership within the process, making sure that there's a cross-functional team. And I realize that sounds very trite, but really, ensuring that the voices of legal, IT, records management are all heard and all herded, because it can be a herding cats exercise to sort of bring all of these different groups together because of the complexity of information governance. So there's a couple things that organizations can do pragmatically to really start to bring some order to the e-discovery chaos. One way to think about this is that the centralization is key. Information is going to continue to exist in multiple locations. One of our surveys on where people store information actually shows that the number one and two location for people to store electronic information is on their hard drive or on network file shares. So, the reality is that local machines are going to be sources of data. Many organizations are putting their paper records into boxes and storing them because they are important records and ones that they want to keep. Those are all discoverable and need to be reviewed alongside the rest of the information, whether it's out in an email archive or on backup tape. A central interface to all of this is critical because if you're going to manage e-discovery as a process, which is really what you want to aim for, is controlling the process of preserving, collecting, and understanding what kind of data there is, you need a centralized interface across all of it. And you want to be able to execute all of the process activities that you need to do, such as putting things on legal hold or understanding how much data may be out there so that you can make informed legal decisions. You want to be able to do the collection. So index and cull and do analytics on the data where it lives. You want to enable the collaboration between legal and IT. One thing that I often hear from, especially from IT folks, is that they feel like legal just leans on them to go get data. Or records management folks may say, legal just told me to go get all this data, but I don't really know what I'm supposed to do. And meanwhile, legal can't understand why their organization can't get information for them quickly so that they can do their jobs. And you really want to start to provide some level of business intelligence on top of this information. So understanding, how much data lives out in my information warehouse where all of my paper is. How many documents are there? How many records are there? How many gigabytes of data live out on the file shares that are potentially responsive? You start to be able to make informed decisions on how to handle discovery once you have that centralized access. And what's important as well is to understand where all that information lives. So that means data maps not necessarily just your electronic sources, but also understanding your paper sources and the file plan there so that you know what kind of information exists and how it might affect the practice of discovery within your organization. The reality is that if you address e-discovery, you can really reduce costs downstream. And that happens in a number of ways. So in the early part of the 2000s, organizations were paying upwards of $2,500 a gigabyte to process data. And that was just for EDD processing. And that could include some of the paper processing that was going on a reactive basis. Organizations would take their paper records and send them to these scanning and coding shops and pay a ton of money to have them simply turned into TIFFs or PDFs so that they could be reviewed alongside other electronic information. And what was happening was they were taking every single record that they had, scanning it, and putting it alongside all of their email and everything else, and there was a ton of duplicate information. And all of that was being reviewed in a linear fashion by their legal teams, which just led to huge processing and then legal review costs. What organizations want to do now is make sure that they send the minimum amount of data for processing and the minimum amount of data for review. And how do you do that is you get that information earlier, you're able to cull it down with tools for analysis, and you're able to really get at how much data there is and what kind of data that there may be. And this enables the full spectrum of what we call ECA or early case assessment. So what can happen in early case assessment is you can make decisions based on file inventory. So understanding that you may have a million documents to review can help a legal team say, the cost of doing this is more than what we want to pay. Let's settle for half of what it would cost us to do discovery. There's an immediate cost savings there. But just as important is knowing what kind of information exists beyond just how much there is. So being able to quickly get insight into that information so that you can make merit-based decisions. So for example, you could say you've pre-imaged all of your paper records, you could quickly do a search there and see if there is a smoking gun or evidence of culpability or evidence that will immediately get you out of it, and you can make your decisions very, very quickly from there so that you're ready for meet and confer sessions and the like. You can very easily eliminate the wasted time of what I call reactive overcollection, which is always going out and getting all of the information without the ability to know what there is and have it sort of pre-culled down to the minimum amount. And then avoiding duplication of work across matters. And that happens both on the collection side, where you may be doing collections multiple times across multiple cases, as well as on the review side, where you want to manage information and treat it consistently across matters. And so one of the things that the data shows is that companies are really trying to do defensible deletion as well. This is really gets back to that notion of proactive information management and governance. According to our data, you know, almost 20% of respondents believe that at least a third of their information would go away if they practiced information governance effectively. And what was interesting as well is there was a significant amount of respondents who indicated that up to 50% or more of their data was either unnecessary or outdated. That's significantly more in the electronic world, where a lot of information is just kept for no reason or because the notion that storage is cheap. Paper records do tend to be managed a little bit more granularly and proactively because the records management practice is there, and the file plan is detailed enough to be able to do that and expire content. But one of the things that organizations are really trying to do is make sure that they get rid of information so that they don't have the risk of having to discover it downstream. And so that's an important point, is that addressing e-discovery not only can reduce cost, but reduces risk. So it's really a win-win scenario with multiple benefits. So, you know, you can minimize the chance of being sanctioned because you can quickly lock down data with a legal hold process that is defensible. And you know, what that can do is really help you argue that your efforts have been reasonable and that you don't deserve to be sanctioned just in case you were to miss something. You can minimize data movement, and this is important both in the electronic and the physical world, because if the chain of custody goes bad, there's going to be a sanction for spoliation. So in the electronic world, you want to minimize the movement of data from application to application. And in the physical world, you want to minimize the movement of data from vendor to vendor because it just increases risk and complexity into the process. And what, you know, addressing e-discovery allows you to do is really centrally track that data movement, you know, make sure everything is defensible, get the consistent treatment of data across cases because it's being centrally managed, and, you know, really enable the legal hold on multiple cases and or multiple legal holds on a single set of data or a single data asset that may be across cases. So for organizations that actually start to proactively address e-discovery in this way with that kind of central notion or centralized notion, they're not only going to reduce their costs, but they're going to reduce their risk, which really kind of goes back to why is e-discovery in the mainstream and why is it, you know, starting to become a really hot topic, is that if you start to address e-discovery, it's one of those projects where you're going to see an instant return on investment. And in the business world, that's what everyone is looking for, is instant return on investment, instant business value. And so why do we get this instant return on investment? Because not only are we reducing cost and risk, but we're enhancing performance. So from a business perspective, if I'm on the legal team, I want to make sure I walk into my meet and confer session, the 26F negotiation, with a very targeted collection plan, you know, better cost shifting arguments so that, you know, I can tell the other team, if you want us to do this collection of this kind of data, you have to pay for it, and here's why. And be able to say, you know, here are the data sources we cannot get at because it presents an undue burden. So showing up for those meet and confer sessions prepared is going to lead to better outcomes and lower costs and just a better performance. You're also going to be able to make more defensible matter decisions, which will be important, you know, come case time. You know, being able to document everything and say, here's exactly why this decision was made, and here's why we can defend the, you know, leaving out this kind of data from our discovery. Here's why it was, you know, we don't want this type of data included. All of those things become extremely important. And then, like any other business process, if you manage e-discovery as a process, it becomes much more repeatable and you start to get continuous improvement. And so not only are you reducing cost and risk, but you're just enhancing the performance of your legal team and of the discovery team in general. Also really important here as a benefit is the smoother collaboration. And collaboration happens both inside a corporation and outside a corporation with external parties. One thing that is just always true is that e-discovery requires a team approach, and it requires legal and IT to work together, legal, IT, and records management to work together. So if you're addressing e-discovery on this proactive basis, you know, legal gets to do its early case assessment without a complete reliance on IT to do this reactive collection all the time. And IT doesn't have to continually send resources out to do collection and send records management off to go, you know, figure out what exists in paper and bring that together with the electronics. It's much more proactively managed and already there, and legal can then run their search terms or have IT run search terms for them, depending on the level of maturity of the organization. And then the added benefit is getting more efficient management of external resources. So understanding when to bring in a law firm, when data is going to go out to a service provider, and then managing that process. I've seen organizations centralize e-discovery in such a way that they provide their external law firms access to information that they themselves are storing. So it just gives an organization a lot more options in terms of, you know, how to work with external parties and how to make that whole process a lot more efficient. In the world of you know, electronics and digital information, it's kind of sad that paper gets overlooked very often. You know, there is a realization or an assumption that paper is better managed than electronic data. And that tends to be somewhat true in the sense that, you know, records managers have very detailed file plans that they work with, and the practice is a lot older than the management of electronic records. And the fact is we create a lot more digital information and as a result a lot more digital junk that is really, you know, unnecessary and oftentimes outdated. But the fact is that paper records are just as discoverable as electronic content and actually have to be reviewed alongside electronic content. You don't want a lawyer to be looking at electronic content in one system on their machine and then trying to go review an electronic or a paper document and mark it up. You really want them to be able to view that all on their computer and in electronic form. You know, the interesting thing is as we think back to early case assessment, you know, a lot of times because electronic information is scattered across so many distributed sources, it's very difficult to do early case assessment because that data takes a lot of time to collect, bring together, process, and put alongside each other in order to kind of do a first pass review. But oftentimes that paper is much more organized if it's managed, you know, at a records management vendor that you trust and is experienced. And if you want to do early case assessment, that might be the best place to go and look for data very quickly or information very quickly to know, hey, what kind of content is related here? And a lot of early case assessment is not really, let me review everything that's potentially responsive, but it's really about, let me search for certain keywords. Let me look at the records of certain custodians and understand what's there. And that can really inform the process downstream. So overlooking paper for a legal team, you know, is really... you can really slow down the process and keep things uninformed because, let's face it, organizations have a long way to go in managing electronic content. So if you turn to your paper stores first and really understand what's there, it can inform the collection of the electronic content and really inform the decision-making process. And, you know, pre-imaging your paper records is what's going to make that available at the push of one button. You know, it's as simple as, you know, one search of that data to kind of figure out what kind of information is there. Might there be something of merit in this case, or might this be something that we want to fight? And you know, you can even, you know, cull those records before imaging if you're managing them, you know, sort of doing it on a proactive basis through a trusted provider. And so, you know, being able to, you know, have that information available at really a moment's notice is going to speed up early case assessment, make it faster, and then, again, optimize the performance of your electronic discovery process, which is really, again, what we're going for, is a process improvement. Nothing's going to be perfect on day one. You know, we look at information governance and e-discovery. They're very complex processes unto themselves, and so you're never going to get everything right on day one. But if you start to think about this as managing e-discovery as a process, centralizing the interface to information, and being able to get the most out of your various stores of information, you're going to start to see the continuous improvement. And so, you know, what can you do today, pragmatically, to start making this a lower cost, lower risk process. One is define what your process is. Organizations tend to own different elements of the e-discovery process. Some organizations, you know, are just managing legal hold notifications, and that's it, and that's all they can do. Others are managing all their information proactively. They're managing the identification, collection, processing, and first pass review, and then sending data to review for their law firms. So really define what your process is and what elements you want to own and are capable of owning. That's the first step. And the second step, sort of in parallel with defining the process, is making sure you have alignment of the team players. I mean, this really is a combination of legal, IT, and records management. And I say records management, that encompasses not only the traditional records management department, but also various, you know, business units and the voice of the business in terms of what kind of needs they have for information. That's very, very important. Getting that alignment there and getting some level of ownership around this. As you saw from the data earlier, a lack of ownership or a lack of awareness of who owns information governance is one of the big problems in the way of organizations. So if you can solve that ownership problem, assign it out to the right executive within the organization, and then assign roles and responsibilities from there, you have a much better chance of success. You also want to really start looking at defensible disposition, you know, getting rid of data so that you don't have to do discovery on things that are unnecessary or outdated. You want to make sure that you're not paying to, you know, always do that. So getting your records management policies in place and then getting the execution of those policies in place so that it's automated, there's a workflow around it, and you start to, you know, reduce the universe of information within your organizations. And then when it comes to e-discovery specifically, think centralized interface. You want to be able to look across all of your data stores, but really don't forget about paper. You want to think about this as the same way in the digital world. You want to minimize data movement. You don't want this being shuffled between, you know, 10 different vendors because you run the risk of spoliation and having a chain of custody problem. And you can rely on third-party experts even as the chain of custody experts. There's very few people within a corporation who want to be deposed, you know, as an expert witness on the chain of custody, because oftentimes it's very complex and sometimes outside of their control. So one of the benefits of having a third party is being able to rely on chain of custody experts who know what they're doing with data handling, have a lot of experience in managing data and managing different types of records, whether it's digital or electronic, and know the process and are willing and experienced, you know, to go on the stand and be deposed by litigators. So those are all of the things that you can look at today and start to get to work on. You don't necessarily want to feel like you boil the ocean on day one, but these are the types of things that you can have projects going on today that will provide immediate value to your organization. And so with that, I'd like to turn it over to Kevin Coughlin of Iron Mountain to kind of talk about, you know, some of the things that he's seeing in terms of organizations, you know, really try to take control of litigation and e-discovery. Kevin?
Great. Thanks, Barry. I appreciate it. Well done. That was some great information you just shared with the group out here. Folks, before I go through, I want to cover a few use cases and tell you how Iron Mountain has helped customers in many of the challenges that Barry just articulated. But before I do that, I want to go through a few numbers and try to anchor the discussion in reality. So first number I'm going to put up is 80%. So 80%, according to Fulbright and Jaworski, about 80% of every dollar spent in a lawsuit is spent on review and preparation. And if you remember at the beginning of the presentation, Barry put up a slide where he put a number up there. $1.3 billion in 2010 was spent by large corporations really in processing review or review of preparation. So $1.3 billion in figuring out what you have and identifying and collecting it. That's a big number. 80% of that is just north of $1 billion. So there's a huge amount of money being spent to identify and collect information. And if you recall through the presentation, Barry also pointed out that a lot of that data being collected is typically not required, or is redundant, or could have been destroyed. So what if you took that number instead of being 80% and you knocked it down to 50%, or $500 million net savings? It's a huge number if you look across the market that we're talking about. So big opportunity to identify and make sure you're retrieving only what's required. The next number I want to look at is 200. So $200 is the blended hourly rate of legal review costs, including travel, et cetera. Now, I would argue that the folks being paid $200 an hour are better served helping you define case strategy, helping you prepare for litigation, versus going out there and helping you identify what information might be relevant or not. Meaning, you don't want them out there cracking boxes. You don't want them out there doing data maps of information on the network. That should have already been done. And if it was done, and this is part of the information governance we were talking about, if you had that in place, if you had a proactive approach where you were identifying records that are important, you had a system in place of management, you could easily retrieve those records and not spend enormous hours out there with folks getting paid $200-plus dollars an hour to retrieve that information. The next stat is $3 million. So $3 million, that seems to be average size cost per case today. Again, this is some Fulbright-Jaworski numbers. And the last number is 10. So $10 million is the amount of money spent by large organizations per year for litigation. That number does not include judgments. It does not include settlements. It really is a staggering number, especially if you look across the industry and we start looking at that billion-dollar number I quoted a little bit earlier. So to me, these numbers are certainly shocking when you put them in context of dollars. And it's clear that discovery is definitely growing. It's out of control in terms of costs, in terms of number of individuals and events, and in terms of the impact that it has on your overall organization's efficiency. So with that in mind, I want to go through a couple things. Before I go into a few use cases, I'll make one more slide up here on challenges. Again, Barry had touched on this briefly, but 42% of corporate counsel today indicates that their company has a process for handling discovery requests, but it's inconsistently applied or implemented in an ad hoc manner. That seems to be true pretty much whomever we talk to at Iron Mountain, and certainly I think Barry was proving that as well, that there's a desire to implement an information governance model. There's a desire to implement it from the top down. But even when it's in place, it's not always executed as efficiently as it could be. So as I go through some use cases, think about this. So what if you could implement a well-defined, repeatable, defendable discovery process? Where you can remove the uncertainty, remove your risk, and in many cases, from an IRMOP perspective, a lot of the uncertainty, a lot of risk comes in when you bring a lot of vendors in place. So limit your vendors. So we believe you can get this number. Instead of being 42% of corporate counsel believe there are processes that's ad hoc, we can get it much higher. We believe there is an ability for you to manage that process much more effectively if you have a trusted partner or someone who helps you along the way. And in our world, we spend a lot of our time with your records. So with that stated, let me go through a couple of use cases. So the first one, this is a customer we did work for. I'm going to leave names off here, but it was a sporting goods company. These guys needed to image and index over 1,400 boxes and containing over 50,000 records. They had about 14 days to do it to respond to the request. They came to us at Iron Mountain, and we were able to help these folks deliver this within a time frame. In this case, we were able to help this company, again, secure the boxes. In this case, they weren't at Iron Mountain. They're actually out in the field in their offices, in some cases out of some competitive locations. We got the records in. We imaged them within the tight time frames. But when you look at it from the corporation perspective, what was important to them was making sure the quality was extremely high, that their timeline had to be met, and security was absolutely paramount for them. So they couldn't allow these records to simply leave a facility, whether their facility or a competitor's facility, and lose chain of custody. So I know that Barry has talked about this earlier, and I'll talk about throughout my presentation, chain of custody is absolutely critical. When you get into court, you have to have a defensible process. You have to be able to state how those records were handled, that they weren't inadvertent disclosures along the way, the records were secure. And for those of you folks who may not be familiar, PCI, which is a payment credit card industry standard, basically it secures your digital data on how you do interactions with businesses. Iron Mountain facilities, its transportation network, its trucks, all the way through. We adhere to that standard. So your data, when it comes off your site or from a competitor site, is going inside of our controls, our security controls, which gives you that defensible chain of custody that is so critical when you're facing litigation. Another example I want to run through, and we'll let that build out for you a little bit, is a global energy company. So in this case here, they had about 8,000 boxes of documents that they actually have located at Iron Mountain in this case. And they had about, they were on a tight time frame as well, and they're considering moving the records essentially 100 miles outside of state lines to another state to have these records imaged. So the point here is that there's a, when records are stored with your vendor, and let's just, you know, obviously we're Iron Mountain, so I'll pick on Iron Mountain, but when your records are stored with a vendor, you are much better served by working with that vendor if they have the capabilities to process your legal documents within their walls. For obvious concerns, risk being one of them, which we just talked about, you don't want to increase time. And certainly, you can incur costs if you start pulling records, retrieving records, and transporting records. So the point here is you want to make sure you have a vendor, and in our case, Iron Mountain provides these services specifically for legal review to help them process your documents within the walls of where the documents are securely stored today. And also worth mentioning, these records that the company came to us, we didn't just grab their records, and Barry had talked about before, you don't want to image everything. That's never a good practice. But often companies will image everything because they frankly don't know what they have or what they don't have. In this case here, this company wasn't the worst, but they weren't the best in their records keeping. We actually went through and we were able to cull down their records and image only what was relevant to that particular case. So the point being that you know, find a vendor, keep it within the walls, and image only what's needed. It's absolutely critical to keep those costs down and, of course, be able to respond within those tight timelines you may have. And the last use case is really in the mortgage industry here. So here we had a mortgage servicing department of a global financial firm. Again, I'll leave the name out here. They had to do a rapid conversion of paper to images, again, to respond to litigation requests. They actually had a vendor that they had used in the past. But the vendor, frankly, couldn't handle the sheer volume of what had to happen and, of course, the time frames. And I'll tell you, a million pages is not an awful lot. Within the 6 weeks, that can be a lot. We've done jobs that are, you know, 60 million-plus pages within similar time frames. But the point here is that you need to make sure that whoever you're going to do work with, when you have records that are of importance and relevant in discovery, that you can scale to meet your timelines. So you don't want to find a vendor that, you know, all of a sudden, hey, I'm facing a $4 million sanction if I can't, you know, just deliver these documents in time. You really need to be sure who you're getting in bed with can respond and present those documents back to you to meet your timelines. The other thing worth mentioning is there's a concept of geolocation out there. So in many cases, a lot of organizations that we store records with, they're across North America, they're across the world. Iron Mountain has facilities. We have a geo footprint that's quite broad and quite diverse. Well, we can typically image very close to where those records may be if they're not in our facilities and they're in your facilities. So, again, keep in mind scalability, geolocations, and finally, I drilled on it before. I'll touch it again, security. Security, security, security. You have to make sure those records are defensible, that they've been protected all along the way. And lastly, in this case here, this customer had to have some help with their indexing. So they had a lot of records out there and a lot of boxes, and literally it would have been cracking these boxes and going through every single record for pulling just relevant records that they needed. It was what they had asked for. What we actually did for them was index all the records. So in the future case, when something else happened, they could easily identify the records, they knew where they were at, and they could pull back just those records of interest. Again, it goes to the concept of reducing that data set, managing only what you need, identifying only what you need to manage, and then bringing that information back. So 95%. So most folks don't know this, but 95% of the Fortune 1000 store their records with Iron Mountain. We've been in the business since 1951. We have a lot of your data. I will tell you that a lot of corporations out there, more often than not, folks throughout the organization don't know that their records are Iron Mountain and or don't know that Iron Mountain can process their records when litigation comes up. And when I say process litigation, records litigation, you're all familiar with coding, unitization, base stamping, all the basic stuff here. We do that with an Iron Mountain. So more often than not, we will find corporations looking to pull records out, And it's not until they realize that they can keep their records within their trusted environment, their trusted partner or trusted advisor environment, i.e. Iron Mountain, and manage those records within our walls. So keep in mind that as you're out there, we don't believe the GC should become the general contractor. We believe that they can work with a vendor like Iron Mountain to basically manage that process. If they have records they need, they have those records, they need to be indexed, they need to be culled, they need to be processed for legal review, they need to be formatted in a legal review format. We can do all that within the Iron Mountain chain of custody and Iron Mountain walls. So you don't need to go outside and increase risk by bringing in multiple vendors. And there may be cases where you will, but again, it's an awareness here. We want to ensure our partners who are doing business with us today know we are very well entrenched in this business. We can help them, and not simply from the what I talked about from the indexing and culling perspective, but also from the identification side, and ultimately from an information governance perspective. So Barry talked pretty extensively about information governance, and that is a trend that is moving through the industry. And he actually said that some of it is rebranded as records management. Now, I'd argue that he's right. It is actually rebranded as records management. But at the end of the day, a strong records management program or a strong information governance program is what allows you to prepare for litigation. If you had your information properly indexed, if you had the information properly under some records management program, if you had data maps in place, you would know how to respond very quickly and very efficiently when a matter came up, whether you were pre-indexed and pre-imaged or simply you know where to go to get it. So I can't emphasize enough that an information governance or a records management program is absolutely critical to allow folks to prepare for litigation versus reactive, which is traditionally where most companies are. They're reacting to a litigation that may happen. So my last slide, then we'll open up to questions. So what if you could? What if you could predictably manage discovery against your budget and reduce outside counsel and legal fees? And what if you could, I think to build up slow folks, limit legal and process risk by making discovery defense on repeatable process? Well, finally, what if you could improve your legal decision-making by quickly and actively providing potentially relevant data to more effectively settle or litigate a particular matter? And we believe with a single vendor, you're best served if that vendor can process those records within their chain of custody, within their walls, and we believe Iron Mountain is very well positioned to help you with that. So with that, I will turn it back over to Scott.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you for your informative presentation. We have about 10 minutes for Q&A. And again, I'll encourage anyone in the audience to submit a question. We do have a few. And the first question is actually directed toward Barry. And Barry, the first question that we have is, why not just concentrate on discovery of electronic information and worry about paper when it comes up?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's one that, because of the press around digital discovery and around, you know, the smoking gun email, there are a good amount of assumptions that's where the real problem is. And I think the danger in just kind of focusing on electronic information and worrying about paper when it comes up is that you're ignoring the fact that there could be a lot of hidden costs in doing paper reactively. You know, one might be that you end up having to go to a scanning and coding vendor with very high costs for, you know, scanning and then processing that data into electronic format to be reviewed alongside everything else. The second is, as I talked about, the paper that you have, if you've organized it nicely and, you know, you've got it at your fingertips, can really be the conduit to very early case assessment and knowing very quickly if there's some merit or if there's certain things you need to be looking for. So to me, paper is one of the keys to a good early case assessment strategy, which is what, you know, is the goal for a lot of corporations. So worrying about it when it comes up is going to limit the benefits that you get out of having a proactive e-discovery initiative.
That makes a lot of sense. So our next question from the audience is directed to you, Kevin. And the question is, we have records stored with Iron Mountain, but they're not well indexed. How can you help me identify what's relevant versus imaging everything?
Yeah, sure. So thanks, Scott, for that question. I think I touched on it a little bit in my presentation as well. We do have the ability to help customers who may not index the documents very well index them after the fact. So we have done some massive jobs for corporations that literally have boxes here at Iron Mountain. They don't know what's in the box. We will go through that. We have secure rooms. We have consulting. And based on the information that they want us to index their records on, we will go through and re-index those records for them. And in the process, we will pull out the records that they're interested in for a particular legal matter. So it's either go through and re-index is a job we call a special project, or it could be a legal matter at hand. We need to identify these sets of records. They're in these X boxes. Help us out. We will index everything if required, which typically makes sense along the way, or we'll just pull out what you need. So there are multiple ways to tackle it. In a perfect world, just storing records of Iron Mountain that have been indexed properly, that's not always the case, although I wish it was. To Barry's comment, you know, paper world is typically in a better shape than the electronic world when it comes to records management. Not always, and when it's not, we can help customers out.
Got it. So, Kevin, the next one is actually addressed to you as well, and it's sort of along the same line of thinking. If we have tapes that need identification and restoration, is this something that Iron Mountain can help with?
Sure. So we do. Iron Mountain has a tape restoration business. In fact, we have a significant business on just the tape storage side. So we store an awful lot of data for companies, some very, very large companies around the world, in fact. And as part of that service, we have the ability to identify tapes, identify catalogs on tapes, and identify records of particular interest on tapes and restore that information to the medium that a customer requires. So we certainly can help people, and probably not news to folks on this call here, but probably around 85% of my tape business on the restoration side is for discovery. So it's not simply for DR. It's typically done from a discovery perspective, which, by the way, goes back to something that Barry had mentioned earlier. Having a defensible program on why you destroy data is critical, because there are many instances in many cases where you do want to be destroying your data, in this case tapes, so that they are not discoverable at a later date. But the point is, yes, we can certainly help people restore data. We also hope folks can figure out, restore data. We also hope folks understand when to destroy their data as well.
Well, that's certainly comprehensive. So the next question made a heck of a lot of sense to me, and this is directed at you, Barry, and that's simply, how do we start? How do we start a litigation readiness program or strategy?
It is a great question, and I think a starting point is really identifying what the e-discovery process means for your organization, in the sense of how are you doing it today? If it's a reactive nightmare, what are the steps that you can take to address that? So it's really it usually starts with defining roles and responsibilities for different parts of the team, and then looking at a data map and addressing where do we have information? Is it paper records? Is it predominantly electronic records? How do we start to bring all of this together? So really getting that data map going, and then from there identifying do we have the resources to handle this internally? What do we need to do to make this more efficient, and then what do we have the wherewithal to handle from a budget perspective, from an infrastructure perspective, and making decisions from there. It is a very complex exercise, but if you start off with the correct allocation of roles and responsibilities, understanding where information is and all the potential sources of it, then you can set the strategy from there.
And Barry, this is Kevin. I'm going to just add to that. Iron Mountain does actually have a pretty substantial consulting business that focuses just on developing retention schedules for our customers today. So we help corporations that are struggling with this question. We go on site, we help understand their information, and put together a program that allows them to start moving in the right direction.
Well, so there's a follow-on to this, Barry. The follow-on question is, what other people in the organization should we be working with to address discovery?
It is cross-functional. So you know, it, if you have a records management group within your organization, it certainly makes facilitating the cross-functional communication a lot easier. And in fact, we've seen a lot of records management groups evolve into information governance groups. You know, I think the question of ownership is a difficult one. You know, should the general counsel be ultimately responsible for e-discovery, or should the CIO be ultimately responsible? And it's going to vary across organizations. It's going to depend on culture, but there should be one executive who's ultimately, you know, to answer for electronic discovery. The way I like to think of it is that legal is the business process owner who's going to define requirements and then works with IT to be able to say, here's what we need to be able to do and get out our information, and then works with records management to say, you know, this is the way that we need to get information. And oftentimes that records management group is the liaison between legal and IT because they can speak both languages. So it's, you really need to include the whole business as well, because if you don't give employees a way to manage information or access it or store it that works for them, they will figure out ways around the rules that will then create an e-discovery problem in the future. So it's legal, it's IT, it's records management, and it's, you know, the users of the organization, the consumers of information. It really is that holistic.
Well, thank you. So we're coming to the close of our time today, and I just wanted to ask Barry, Kevin, do you have any final comments that you want to make about our presentation today?
This is Barry. I'll just say that you know, I really believe there's a mandate for action, and e-discovery is a great starting point for information governance initiatives, because as you learn more about your data going through, you know, the data mapping, for example, you will start to inform other information management initiatives within your organization, whether it's storage and archiving, whether it's records management, or simply, you know, making information available to employees. So there is a mandate, and it's a good place to start.
Yeah, great. And this is Kevin as well. To add on to that, we find most organizations are responding in reactive mode. They don't have what Barry just talked about, have a records management program in place, understand where the data is at. Certainly the trend is to move to a litigation preparedness model or some proactive model. Certainly what we want corporations to be thinking about is litigation is no longer a, you know, if it's going to happen. It's when and how many times is it going to happen. It's the cost of doing business. You have to look at it that way. You have to prepare for it. You have to have a model in place so you can execute when it happens so you're not scrambling. So, to close on, for corporations, figure out how to prepare. Start with your information government, start with your record management perspective, and then follow all the way through to e-discovery.
Well, thank you both, gentlemen. Again, I want to thank Barry Murphy, co-founder and principal analyst at EDJ Group, and Kevin Coughlin, who's director of product management for Iron Mountain. That was a terrific, informative, and definitely required attendance type of presentation today. I want to thank Iron Mountain for being our sponsor. I'm Scott Pierce, publisher of Corporate Counsel Magazine, and I want to thank everyone today for joining us. Thanks so much, everybody. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you.